So if you looked at it, if you look at your text, you probably recognize this parable. You probably learned this parable if you went to Sunday school as a child. It was probably one of the first ones because it seems to be so simple. The problem with this is often we never get past our child's understanding of Jesus' parables. So we take from this that we vaguely understand that we're supposed to believe in Jesus. And that's great. But if you remember the song, we've tacked on a verse to the end of that song that really isn't found in Jesus' story. And with our Greek linear thinking, that becomes the moral of the story. And that last verse in that song tells us that blessings will rain down on us as long as we keep praying. And so we have taken, like whenever you read the story, you just automatically think of the song, you sing the song in your head, and you get to that last verse, and that's the blessings will come down when the prayers go up. So build your life on the Lord. And that's the moral of the story. So we're going to look beyond that moral today. So I'm going to read you the story. It's the parable of the two builders. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Everyone coming to me and hearing my words and doing them, I will show you what he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug down and went deep and laid a foundation upon a rock. When a flash flood arose, the stream broke against that house, and the stream was not strong enough to shake it because it was well built. The one hearing and not doing, he is like a man who built a house upon the ground without any foundation, against which the stream broke, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. So this story is actually found in two of our Gospels. The one I'm reading is from Luke, as you see on the top. This is also found in Matthew. Matthew has a slightly different emphasis in his story. It's almost the same, but Matthew emphasizes the wise man and the foolish man, where Luke emphasizes building on a foundation versus building on no foundation at all. So we're doing the Luke one because of that idea of the foundation. I want you to take a quick look at the rhetoric that we're using. This is called step parallelism. Do you see the lines that I have highlighted in blue, how they're parallel with each other? It's pretty simple. And then the green lines talking about laying a foundation or no foundation at all. And then the red lines is the culmination when the flash flood comes. What's going to happen to the house? So you see the parallels in that. That's called step parallelism because it's like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 instead of inverse parallelism or chiastic format, which I've talked about a lot, and that's that X format. So anyway, step parallelism. I just love the rhetoric in Jesus' teaching, so I hope that you guys love that too. So Jesus told this story into a specific setting in both Matthew and Luke. The one in Matthew we call the Sermon on the Mount. The one in Luke we call the Sermon on the Plain. The reason we call it the Sermon on the Plain in Luke is because Luke tells us that Jesus went to a level spot to teach. Okay, probably the same thing. He's on a mountain, he looks around for a level spot, and so there he is. And Luke, we have a synopsis of what Matthew gives us a much broader picture of. So in the Sermon on the Mount, that's of course where we have the Beatitudes. We also have Jesus saying things like, the law says, do not murder. But I tell you, if you even call your brother a moron in your heart, it's like you have murdered him. The law says, do not commit adultery. But I tell you, if you even think about it, it is as if you have done it. Jesus seems to be saying it's more an attitude of what's in our heart than what we are actually doing. Jesus says, the law says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, if someone comes and takes your shirt, turn around and give him your coat also. The law says, love your neighbor. But I tell you, love your enemies. Now Jesus is saying, the one who hears my words and does them, I will tell you what he is like. So this hearing and doing, this is a theme that we see in the prophets. And I'm going to take you to one of those places because it's apropos to what we're going to be talking about for the rest of this story. So this is in Ezekiel. Before we turn there, before I read that, though, I want to talk about the hearing and doing thing and why the prophets emphasized this. When you hear something, if you believe it, it will change what you do. If you hear and don't believe, then you just go on doing whatever you're doing. And doing is a very important part of our life. Doing demonstrates what our belief is. When we meet a person for the first time and we shake their hand, we say, "What do you do?" And no matter how hard we try, you know, what we do is it defines who we are. When we hear somebody telling an exciting story and we're all like, "Oh, and then what did you do?" Our actions are very important. When we meet somebody, "How you doing?" You know, that, "How you doing?" Doing is very important to us. A famous philosopher, Immanuel Kant, said, "To do is to be." And then another famous philosopher, Friedrich Nietzsche, said, "To be is to do." So how do you separate those? Frank Sinatra might have said it best, "Do be do be do be do." Sorry. Ezekiel 33:30. "As for you, son of man," this is God talking to Ezekiel. Son of man should not confuse us here. He's talking about son of a human. "As for you, your people who talk about you by the walls and at the doors of their houses say to one another, each to his brother, 'Come and hear what the word is that comes from the Lord.' And they come to you as people come, and they sit before you as my people. And they hear your words, but they will not do them. For with their lips they show much love, but their heart is set on their own gain. And lo, you are to them like a love song, sung by a beautiful voice and a well-played instrument, for they hear your words, but they do not do them." So this is the theme we see through the prophets. And Ezekiel brings it out here. God is saying to Ezekiel, these people will hear your words, they'll like what they hear, but they will not do what you say. So Ezekiel's message that God is talking about here is a message from God to the people, and it's a warning to them. What's going to happen if they don't turn back to God? So the people have turned their back on God. They've embraced the worship of idols, and God is saying to Ezekiel, tell them this, but don't be surprised if they don't listen to you. Hearing the words, hearing the beautiful love song, sung by a beautiful voice and played on an instrument, is not enough. They have to believe the words so that it would cause them to act on what they hear. So this is what the hearing and doing is. And you can hardly even separate in the prophets, the hearing and doing. It's just, it's like hear and do, hear and do, hear and do. The words are always together like that. So Jesus here says, everyone coming to me and hearing my words and doing them, I will show you what he is like. By saying that, he is giving his words equal weight to the prophets. He has used the prophetic formula to introduce what he's about to say to them. Hear my words and do my words. But he's not just saying, hear the word of the Lord like the prophets would say. He says, hear my words. So not only is he introducing this story as a prophecy, but he is claiming the authority of God behind those words. And in Matthew, we have, after Jesus tells this story, the people are astounded because he taught with one who has authority. He taught as one who has authority. Okay, so that authority that Jesus is claiming definitely came through to the people. He's teaching them as if he knows what he's talking about. Imagine that. So we have a story. We have a story about two builders who are building on a foundation. And there's a couple of different levels that we can look at this story. So how many of you guys, women here, are builders or who have ever built a house? So like a lot of people, right? And so you know about digging down deep and putting it on a foundation. If you don't have a foundation, you know exactly what happens. And it's the same over in Israel for the people who are listening to the story. If they have understanding of what's going to happen during the changing of the seasons, they will understand the importance of a foundation. So this is the like the surface level of the story. Over there in the summer, the grounds get really hard and it feels like a rock. And when you go to try to shovel it, it's like you're trying to shovel into rock. And so if you were fooled into thinking that that was good enough, then you would build your house just on the top of the ground. But when the rainy season comes over there, that ground turns to like slurry. And so if you did not build, if you did not dig down and find a foundation to build on, your house will definitely get washed away during the rainy season. So this is what the people that Jesus is talking to, this is what they're thinking. They're going, it's a fool who does not build on a foundation. So the picture he's drawing is one that's going to be familiar to all of them. But there's a little deeper way to go with this story. So when Jesus tells the story, the people think, hey, wait a minute, we've heard this story before. This is not a new story. So turn your page over. And you have the parable of the two buildings. This is a story that is in the nation's memory. It's a story about their history. This is the famous prophecy from Isaiah about the two buildings. And this prophecy also is a prophecy about the coming Babylonian captivity, the same era that Ezekiel's prophecy, the hearing and not doing. This is that same era. So, the parable of the two buildings. Let's read about this. Isaiah 28, 14 through 18. Therefore, hear the word of the Lord, you scoffers who rule this people in Jerusalem. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with Sheol we have an agreement. When the overwhelming flood passes through, it will not come to us. For we have made lies our refuge, and in falsehood we have taken shelter. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am laying in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. He who believes will not be shaken. And I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plummet. And hail will sweep away the refuge of lies, and waters will overwhelm the shelter. Then your covenant with death will be annulled. Your agreement with Sheol will not stand. When the overwhelming flood passes through, you will be beaten down by it. Okay, here is an example of a chiasm that I'm just talking about. Okay, do you see the parallels here? Look at the blues. This is practically line by line parallel. A covenant with death. You see the two covenants with death? The agreement with Sheol, the overwhelming flood coming through, and in the first, they're saying it will not come to us, but God is telling them you will be beaten down by it. And then the greens, we have made lies our refuge, falsehood our shelter. And then hail will sweep away the refuge, and waters overwhelm the shelter. Line by line parallelism. And then we have, in purple, we have talking about the building that God is going to make. We have the building materials. In the first purple stanza, and in the second purple stanza, we have the what they're going to build with, the building tools. And then we have that center. And this center is an inscription on the cornerstone. He who believes will not be shaken is written on the stone that the new building is going to be built on in Isaiah's prophecy. Okay, some history. 600 years before Jesus told this story, the Assyrian army was threatening the land of Israel and the land of Judah. And over a series of several years, they conquered the nations one by one and took them off to Babylonian captivity. But Israel, during that time, they had a treaty with the land of Egypt. And their treaty was when the Syrian army came, Egypt would come and help them fight. Well, that didn't happen. The Syrian army came, and Egypt was like, peace out, right? Okay, so they were overwhelmed by the Syrian army. And this is, in Isaiah's prophecy here, this is the reference, the covenant with death, is that treaty with Egypt that he is talking about. And interestingly, Egypt, their religion is a religion of death. They worship death and they worship the afterlife in Egypt. And so that's a very apt comparison that Isaiah makes here. The overwhelming flood that's coming through is the Syrian army is just flooding across basically all of that area, just eating up all the little nations in their path. And the people are saying to God, we don't need you because we have Egypt. We have Egypt behind us, and so we're going to be right. The flood's not going to come to us. Thanks for your offer of help, but we have this. So God is saying, no, not going to happen, and it did not. So they're building based on that treaty with Egypt, based on lies and falsehood. It was washed away, and they were taken into captivity for 100 years. Their temple was destroyed, and the Ark of the Covenant was taken. It's never been seen again. Okay, so those two symbols of their relationship with God, their special covenant with God, it's gone. Those symbols are gone. But God has promised them a second building, and that building is going to be measured by justice and righteousness. And I find it really interesting. I will make justice the measuring line. The idea of that is, if you're a builder, you know what I'm talking about. You have that chalk line and you hook it on one end to a nail and then you stretch it across and you snap it and you have a straight line. That's the measuring line that justice is. So we measure up against that line, the line of justice, when we're looking at this new building that God is going to make. And the plummet, that's the plumb bob, you hook it up here and you drop it down to the ground, and that's plumb, straight and level, So this is the picture that Isaiah has given us about what this building that God is going to build. And it's going to be built on a cornerstone called a sure foundation. So this Babylonian captivity was a major turning point in the history of Israel. When they went into captivity, they were worshiping idols. When they came back, they didn't have that problem anymore. They didn't worship the same idols as they had been worshiping before. But here they are back. Now, 100 years later, they're back in the land, and King Cyrus has allowed the Jews to return and to rebuild the temple. So now we have a new temple being built, but they don't have the ark. And so instead of the ark, in this new temple, where the ark would have been, there is a large rock. It's still there. You can't see it because it happens to be under the Islamic Dome of the Rock, and you are not allowed to enter. But it's there. And there's pictures of it. Look it up on the internet. There it is. Okay, so there's this rock. And this rock in Jesus' time is called the Shitia. And the Shitia means foundation stone. So this is called the foundation stone because it is taking the place of the ark as the foundation of the Jewish religious system. And the Jews understood that all the temple buildings that were built around this rock are built on the foundation of this rock. So they understand this rock to be the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. God will build a new house, and its foundation will be on this Shitia. But also in Jesus' time, there's a group of people called the Essenes. And they broke away from the temple system because of the abuses and the corruption that they saw in the system. So Israel has a treaty with Rome. And the priests in the temple system are in the pay of Rome. And the Essenes did not think that's the way the system should work. And so they broke away. And they understood the Shitia to be this. And this was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls just in the 1900s, interestingly enough. It's amazing what you can learn if you keep going and keep learning. So, in the council of the community, there shall be 12 men and 3 priests, perfectly versed in all that is revealed of the law, whose works shall be truth, righteousness, justice, loving kindness, and humility. When these are in Israel, it shall be that tried wall, that precious cornerstone, whose foundation shall neither rock nor sway in its place. So the Essenes understood Isaiah's prophecy to be that these 15 perfect men, once they were in place in Israel, then Isaiah's prophecy would be fulfilled. So that's what they were looking ahead to. So Jesus is telling the story about building on a foundation into two understandings of the Shitia. the Essenes, which were a small community outside of Jerusalem, and most of the other Jews were, they would understand the physical rock to be the Shetiyah. And the Essenes themselves, they were small, so their idea was not as prevalent at the time. So with this physical rock in the temple, in the Holy of Holies, taking the place of the Ark, this is what that rock would have meant to them. It's part of the atonement sacrifice. So what we have here is when the atonement sacrifice happens, people come to the temple, people gather, people crowd in. It's very crowded. It's very usually hot. It's very smelly. You've got the smell of the blood from the sacrifice. My favorite comparison is, have you ever gotten on an airplane and there's a guy in front of you and he's from like the bush and he hasn't showered in 3 years and you really hope that your seat is not next to his, but it really is, you know? This happened to Ted a couple times. So that's what it's like. It's like standing in a crowded area next to just all the human smells. Okay, so take that idea with you, and now let's talk about what it's going to sound like. Everyone's talking out loud. The prayers that are going up are said out loud. So a cacophony of noises that are happening. The animals making noise, all part of the atonement sacrifice. Okay, so now the priest slaughters the lamb, collects the blood, does the atonement sacrifice thing. But the last thing that he'll do, the trumpets blare. Trumpets blare, cymbals clang, okay? And this is the symbol that God has accepted the sacrifice. And so now the priest takes a pan of burning coals from the altar and sprinkles incense on top of it and takes that into the Holy of Holies and sets it on the rock, the Shetiyah. And this is the final step in the atonement sacrifice. Okay, so it's the culmination. That Shetiyah is the site of the culmination of the atonement sacrifice. This is symbolizing taking away the guilt of sin. So now we're going to go back to Jesus' story with that understanding of what that rock, that foundation that this man is building his house on, what that's about. Okay, so he digs down deep. He builds on the Shetiyah, the foundation. But Jesus has replaced the idea of the Shetiyah by saying, my words, here's the law, but I say to you, do it this way. He has replaced that idea of the Shetiyah with a third idea. And this is no longer the council of men. It's no longer the physical rock, but he's replaced it with himself as a person. Hear my words. If you build your house on my words, he says, when the stream hits, you will not be shaken. Isaiah's parable is about a people who have forsaken their God. The Assyrian army sweeps in and the temple system is destroyed. God promises them a new building. Jesus now has taken this prophecy into his own era. So now it's contemporary with Jesus. Okay, he knew that there's another storm coming. He could see 40, 50 years from now, the Roman army is going to sweep through. They're going to scatter the Jews. The temple is going to be destroyed again. So once again, it's washed away. The Roman flood has washed away the temple. Hasn't been rebuilt. We have not seen a temple since that time. And the story now gives Jesus' listeners that third understanding. Even that rock, even the temple that's built on the rock is not the one that Isaiah has promised. There's another understanding, and Jesus has put himself into that understanding. Now, we are still looking for the final fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. We have not seen that yet. We don't see that justice and righteousness. However, we can look at current events, and we know that there's a storm coming, right? Okay, so it's already starting to rain. The wind is already blowing. And we see the flash floods are starting to build up. Our Western institutions, of politics, religion, moral living are crumbling in the blast of that storm. Not a surprise. If our house is built on any of those, even if it's just one part of our foundation, we are not going to stand when the blast comes. We're not on the foundation stone. So we look and we see that Israel has another treaty. Israel has a treaty with Britain. Israel has a treaty with the United States. Israel has an agreement with death. Are they depending on us to get them through? Are they depending on the world to stand behind them and help them out in this current situation they're in? The United States does not appear in the prophecies. We're not there. We're not going to be the saviors here. We're not going to rush in. We're not going to sweep in and save them. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not saying if you're making any prophecies. I'm just saying, you know, what I know here. In the last days, we do know this, that there's going to be a lot of confusion about what we should believe. People are going to say, Christ is here in the desert. Oh, Christ is here in the mountains. Let's go out and see him. And Jesus says, don't be fooled. Well, how can we not be fooled? We know that some people are going to be fooled. We know that the elect are, even the elect, are going to be led astray by false words. So how are we supposed to know who to follow? And it's going to be hard. It's not going to be like, oh, well, yeah, we can tell because they're gay. We're not going to follow them. Or we can tell because they do this sin that we don't have, you know, on our books. So we're not going to follow that person. But we're told that we're going to be led astray. So it's not going to be something like that. Whatever it is that we're going to see is going to be something that can fool even the elect. So how do we know? And Jesus has said here, hear my words, do my words. And this is not given to us as a checklist. His words are given to us to show a change of heart. Remember at the very beginning when Jesus was saying, the law says this, but I say do this, and he talks about what's going on in our heart. So we need to take to our heart the words that Jesus has said, and we use them as a measure. So those we follow, we look at them and say, well, do they say love your enemies? Do they say do good to those who hate you? Do they say turn the other cheek? If they don't, we're taking shelter in lies. The hallmarks of our institutions, are they justice? Are they righteousness? And righteousness, remember the meaning of righteousness is saving acts. If not, we have a covenant with death. When the Assyrians captured Israel and Judah, yes, God used King Cyrus for eventual good, but Daniel and his friends, they still separated themselves away. They didn't jump in and say, well, yeah, God's going to use it, so it's okay if I'm here in this. Those who hear and do Jesus' words and use them as the measure, they're the ones whose house is going to stand. Otherwise, we are merely listening to a love song sung by a beautiful voice on a well-played instrument. If we don't do the words that Jesus has said, when the flood passes through, the ruin of our house is going to be great. Now, at this point, I usually say, okay, let's pray. But today I'm going to do something a little different, if I can hold it together. My dad, who is at this very moment dying, and actually Bob was on call for this morning. I didn't even know if I would be here this morning. My dad was a preacher. And my dad used to end his sermons by giving one of Paul's famous benedictions, and so I would like to do that today. Now unto him, hang on. Now unto him who is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with great joy, to the only wise God our Savior be glory and majesty, dominion and power both now and forever. Amen.